Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 85. It's August 26th, 2020. Historically speaking, torpedo countermeasures have been a tool used to buy time for a ship or submarine trying to escape an attack. But 21st century naval technology is changing the way they are used. Today, countermeasures can be used as a defensive device or as a distraction that opens up an opportunity to attack. So let's take a dive into this shadowy world, starting with the four basic types of torpedo countermeasures: maskers, jammers, decoys, and anti-torpedo devices, as well as their differences and how they are tactically employed. Broadband passive sonar systems found on modern submarines identify a target by contrasting the broadband energy signal-to-noise ratio with quieter background noise. This contrast is displayed as different shades or colors on the sonar screen, forming traces that waterfall down from the top. Broadband acoustic masking devices that interfere with a sonar's ability to differentiate background noise from a contact, like the Naval Acoustic Electromechanical Beacon MK3, are the simplest of torpedo countermeasures. This saltwater-activated masker is ejected from the submarine and a float is released that tethers the device to a specific depth. A thermal battery powers its motor and electronics, which create the broadband noise. This produces a loud acoustic signature that spans the spectrum of a broadband sonar system, effectively raising background noise above a target's SNR, wiping the sonar operator's display in one solid color with no contrast. As such, they cannot delineate targets from the noise. Maskers have a short operational time and grow quieter as they lose power. It is common to deploy multiple maskers with different start time delays. This gives the evading submarine more time before the masking field expires. They are not effective against most modern torpedoes, such as the Russian UGST or the Black Shark. This is because maskers will cover a submarine's evasion maneuver from the opponent's broadband sonar system, but will not reliably hide a submarine from the torpedo's active or narrowband sonar search modes. With this in mind, Russia's Vist-E torpedo decoy is a 5-inch, 30-pound acoustic countermeasure that combines broadband noise masking with active sonar jamming and torpedo active reproduction. In other words, it can simulate a submarine's own narrowband acoustic signature, but has a relatively short battery life of less than 10 minutes. Overall, the Vist-E is less capable than modern NATOI decoys, but when used in groups, it can create a field of confusion that will hamper most torpedoes. Submarine scudder and launched expendable scudder are less reactive decoys built by Ultra Electronics Ocean Systems and Rafael of Israel. Subscud is preloaded into the internal signal launchers or external launchers, launch tubes that house the countermeasure devices and can be automatically deployed upon torpedo detection. The decoy will hover between a depth of 10 and 300 meters, listening for the incoming torpedo. A torpedo's active sonar is analyzed by the decoy and classified. Subscut customizes its own acoustic decoy transmission to the specific type of incoming torpedo, including the Doppler effect. Doppler effect is important to deceiving torpedo logic because it is one of the many checks the torpedo circuits can make during target verification. When the internal battery runs out, the decoy erases its software and syncs. Lescut is the surface ship counterpart to Subscut and is launched with a rocket motor from a chaff tube topside into the water. The Submarine Countermeasure Acoustic Device, SCAD-102, is used by the Royal Navy's ballistic missile submarines and the Astute class of nuclear fast attack submarines. This 4-inch diameter, self-contained, internally mounted torpedo countermeasure has multi-role capability. It is mission programmed before launch and is capable of jamming and decoying next generation torpedoes, such as the MK-48 advanced capability. ATCAP. Sonar jammers, such as the United States Navy's acoustic device countermeasure MK4 Mod 1, an expendable 6.25-inch diameter, 120-pound countermeasure, produce wide-range tones designed to confuse a torpedo detection logic with a large number of false targets. This triggers a target verification algorithm within the torpedo's homing logic and restarts it continuously with multiple new targets every second. This result is the torpedo circling the jammer, verifying targets that do not exist, while the actual submarine exits the search area. Most modern torpedoes, such as the Royal Navy Spearfish, have modes to defeat this kind of jammer, And older, less capable torpedoes can use guidance commands sent over the long trailing wires connected to the launching submarine to reset the torpedo's search mode. However, this latter method requires direct input from the submarine's fire control system operators. In February 2019, the United States awarded a contract to develop a 3-inch version of the ADK MK4 called the ADC MK5. This will decrease the operational cost of the ADC program due to each device being stored within the submarine pressure hull instead of externally. An external ADC has a 12-year replacement lifespan, but only a 2-year operational life after it is installed into the external mount. Phase 3 of this contract explores the feasibility of automated underwater vehicles deploying torpedo countermeasures. This gives the attacking submarine more tactical flexibility because he can prepare the battle space before an attack with numerous automated mobile decoys that move away from the submarine's position. Testing of the system is taking place on naval ranges off the coast of Washington, California, Virginia, and at the Atlantic Undersea Test and Evaluation Center in the Bahamas. To respond to the countermeasure homing abilities of modern torpedoes, such as target verification and frequency discrimination, Leonardo has created the C-303S for submarines and C-310 for surface ships. C-303S is a 12-barrel external pneumatic countermeasure launcher that shoots a 3.7-foot-long, 33-pound, 3-inch diameter stationary jammer and a 5-inch mobile target emulator, or decoy. The jammer is supported by a floating buoy that deploys a cable, submerging the jammer to its most effective depth for the environment. The mobile target emulator, MTE, will move away from the jammer, responding to the incoming torpedo's active pings as if it is a valid return. The Doppler of the moving decoy and high SNR response is sufficient to lure the weapon away for a short time. When the weapon realizes it's following a decoy, it is likely to return to the jammer and not the target. The C-303S launcher can be manually or automatically fired upon torpedo detection. The system will give a recommended evasion course that moves away from the mobile decoy. Ultra Electronics is developing the next generation countermeasure, NGCM. This 3-inch device can be internally launched and will swim away from the launching platform and provide tactical information via an acoustic communication link and updates between ships and submarines in the battle space. The NGCM will act as an autonomous full duplex mode acoustic communication link and torpedo jammer or decoy if necessary. The 3-inch swimmer MK2 device is in development. It provides more tactical capabilities and can be launched externally. This gives submarine commanders more tactical options. Devices such as the NGCM expand sonar detection range, act as guards against counterattack, and can provide broadband masking while the submarine repositions itself. Towed decoys are common on most warships. Even the battleship USS Iowa deployed the AN-SLQ-25 Nixie system. Towed decoys employ both a broadband masker that generate more noise energy than the target ship and an active pulse transmitter that returns a torpedo's active sonar ping at 2 to 3 times more amplitude than received. This attracts the torpedo to the towed decoy, where it will circle until it runs out of energy. This is a better option than expendable countermeasures because if power is applied to the towed decoy, it will run continuously and can be reused. Expendable countermeasures have seawater batteries that last between 6 and 45 minutes. Modern towed decoys can also act as torpedo early warning sensors and alert the towing vessel of incoming weapons before their hull-mounted sensors detect them. Ultra Electronics has created the Type 2070 Surface Ship Torpedo Defense System, SSTD. This next-generation torpedo countermeasure employs both active and passive methods that reliably decoy and destroy incoming torpedoes. Details as to how the Type 2070 does its job remain highly classified. Russia's Packet ENK anti-torpedo system is designed to engage torpedoes or submarines inside 800 meters. This fast-reacting countermeasure consists of an externally mounted rotary launcher of 8 intercept devices, a Packet E control system, and a Packet AE sonar set. The system can automatically alert on an incoming torpedo, calculate its path, and launch a torpedo disabling anti-torpedo. It provides ships with unique anti-submarine and anti-torpedo capability. This point defense approach is employed if traditional evasion is unsuccessful. Rafael's Torbuster is a mobile decoy that is launched from an external launcher. It mimics the incoming weapon's active sonar, creating a false target. The system will calculate the torpedo's range, and when it reaches the closest point of approach, it self-detonates a charge capable of damaging or destroying any nearby weapon. The evolution of weapons and defenses have counteracted each other since the beginning of warfare. From sword and shield to radar and jammer, military science has parried each new technology with an appropriate response. Since the 1980s, the torpedoes have been the dominant ship killer in naval warfare, leaving the target with little choice but to run the weapon out of energy. Today's anti-torpedo technology, such as Russia's Packet-ENK, close-in anti-torpedo, Israel's Torbuster, and the United States' anti-torpedo compact rapid attack weapons program, ATTCRAW, are making conventional torpedoes obsolete. For the first time, naval weapons platforms have an active option against submerged attacks. They can counter fire on incoming torpedoes rather than rely on deception and evasion as the only method of survival. This provides navies with new offensive opportunities to press an attack when they would normally be forced to maneuver away. 21st century naval combat will look much different than that of the previous century. New weapon systems like the U.S. Navy's hypervelocity projectiles, HVP, and laser turrets will favor the aggressive captains. A shift towards offensive operations has occurred, and commanders who recognize these new capabilities will be rewarded. This is an essay I found through 5 seconds of a Google search on a publication called TheDrive.com. The title is The War Zone, The Shadowy World of Submarine and Ship-Launched Torpedoes Countermeasures. Surviving below the waves relies primarily on stealth, but if detected, countermeasures may be your only shot of keeping out of watery grave, by Aaron Amick, May 14th, 2020. And down here at the bottom, by way of a short bio, Aaron Amick is a retired U.S. Navy submarine sonar man. He served in both Atlantic and Pacific Oceans on 688 Los Angeles-class fast attack and Ohio-class ballistic missile submarines. He has published 2 audiobooks on Cold War-era submarines, Akula SSN Project 971 Subbrief, and USS Nautilus SSN 571 Subbrief. Now, Aaron manages a small Patreon page and contributes to the War Zone. All right. That was fun to read. I don't know any of this world. I am, as it were, entirely out of my depth here. Entirely. I recently, for fun, listened for the first time to a Tom Clancy oldie called Red Storm Rising. And in this book, I think it was sort of Chechens had taken out a bunch of Russia's refining capacity, and it was going to endure a huge oil shortage. And they enacted a existing plan to try to break apart NATO so they could move into the Persian Gulf and claim some oil that they desperately needed. This is an old book. I'm going to find out when it was written. Looks like it was published in 86. Tom Clancy, you know, then in those days was releasing these books pretty quickly, and he more or less invented a subgenre of this incredibly technical military geopolitical fiction, revealing sort of war gaming type stuff and scenarios in pop fiction, more or less. Obviously, a bunch of movie deals. Plots often changed in the movies, and it became sort of a franchise, a brand. So it was really quite instructive, actually. I'm sure if I took the trouble to delve into Tom Clancy's life and work, it would reveal a lot. Just an incredible creator, diving into his own routines and how he came to be a writer and invent that genre. He passed away in October of 2013 at 66. He created a genre, and then he created a franchise. There are many other writers still today, for all I know, are releasing books under the Tom Clancy name. Another reason to bring up this element, though, there's a lot colliding here. And by the way, as an aside, one accidental discovery here is that even this writer on submarines, a former submarine sonar man, and I have very little exposure to submarine sonar men and sonar professionals. One great one is in the movie from Tom Clancy, another of Tom Clancy's books, The Hunt for Red October. We spend quite a bit, the Red October is a submarine, and we spend quite a bit of time down there. And I believe, gosh, I'm going to get this wrong. I believe the actor's name is Courtney B. Vance. He's a great actor. One of, you know, there's a few dozen actors like this gentleman who it's just easy to take for granted. They pop up in lots of places and very often deliver these exceptional performances. And it is, I believe, Courtney B. Vance. He's the sonar man pursuing the Red October, and an incredible job. And so it's just fantastic in today's world that a sonar man can become a content creator, entrepreneur, and use something like Patreon to build a community. That's a wonderful aside. While there's a lot that touches here for me that converges here, topics, and one is just this whole idea of United States military supremacy, the hegemony backed up by all of this military power, having been heavily invested in since World War II. Famously, you know, the U.S. outspends all of its rivals combined, including even China. And I think we could at some point here delve back into even President Eisenhower's warning about the military-industrial complex, and surely it's worth pondering and investigating any inefficiencies and outright corruption involved in budgets of that magnitude. At the same time, I think we have to weigh that against the value of a single military power. It's easy to say when we all, in the United States at least, are born inside that machine. It's theoretically, we're on the same team. And at the same time, in a little Zoom meeting with, you know, like 30 people this morning, we're in a breakout, and somebody mentioned she's a twin, and there's another set of twins in her family. And twins are run, you know, very, very, they have a lot of twins across in their family history. And my comment always, I have good friends who are twin brothers. I have a brother 4.5 years younger than myself. And when I reflect on our teenage years, I was always 4.5 years older. And through childhood, teenage years, 4.5 years makes a big difference. And so any time that we would have skirmishes, scuffles, I could always just stop it whenever it needed to stop. It was getting too heated. I could just shut it down. I was bigger. I'm not a big guy. I'm not an imposing figure, let's say, among my own peers in those years. But my brother's 4.5 years younger. I could stop it. When you have a twin, and as siblings do, you get into sort of a conflict that breaks out, a skirmish, a scuffle, a fight, you're by definition the same. You're literally the same, identical twins. You could just stand and wail on each other until you're capable of doing some very serious damage. There's a beautiful data visualization about the casualties of World War II. It's harrowing, and it represents sort of a peak of the art form, in my opinion, of exceptionally well-organized data crafted into a story, a piece that is cinematic and affecting. And I'll find it and put a link in the show notes here. It's worth checking out. So a piece like this, there's a paragraph here towards the end after just rattling off all of these particulars about these weapon systems. And here it is again. The evolution of weapons and defenses have counteracted each other since the beginning of warfare. From sword and shield to radar and jammer, military science has parried each new technology with an appropriate response. And it mentions that now some of this new tech that's coming that will change warfare yet again puts these submarines very much on the offensive and not just as a defensive. And I think we'll get into these topics too. They hinge on the feedback loop between technology and geopolitics. And of course, for all of us in just easy, simple civilian life, we can still imagine. I've never been a big radar detector guy. I don't really speed and all that kind of stuff, but I've certainly had buddies been in cars with radar detectors, and you imagine that the radar detector and the radar from the traffic cops are in their own little constant dance of trying to achieve relative technological superiority. And here you're dealing with militaries where literally everything is on the line. And so that's fascinating. I'll tell you, though, the main reason I also was looking on Google for an article of this kind, having just read Red Storm Rising, is I was thinking of it also as analogy, that you have these submarines out in the ocean, concealed from each other, in a constant dance, trying to discover the other, maybe trying to take out a convoy, trying to take out non-submarines, gather intelligence, do damage, fire your torpedoes, and then duck away, fire off your countermeasures so you can escape. As an analogy, it made me really think about modern politics, what we have playing out right now. The Republican Party, the Democratic Party, and this particular president has plenty of people in his own party that want him out, want him to lose. And you overlay that with the intelligence agencies. You overlay that with the court system and all of these procedural fights that are playing out, which is what they are. And we don't really know. None of us are ever, ever, ever going to really know what's going on, any more than Russia's packet E in K or Israel's Tor Buster or the Compact Rapid Attack Weapons Program means much to us. You're not going to convince me that you're going to ever really know what James Comey was up to, or Brennan, or Clapper, or any of these people. And there's too many instances where it's been revealed that our intelligence forces had co-opted, had planted people through major media, through all kinds of means, to propagandize or get the word out. And you know what? It's warfare in a very real sense. Cold War, hot war, etc. And it's appropriate. Like in a very real sense, the federal government taxes all of us, and there are massive budgets for these things because they're necessary. They're just different ways of they're on the same effort as the submarines themselves. And even the submarine captains are often just who are expert, massive amounts of training, drilling, prep. This is what they do with their lives out of service, even they in the ocean or in the dark. And now here we are. You're going to tell me you know what's playing out with the DNC, the RNC, these conventions, the way this stuff all breaks out, and who's really doing what? We just don't know. And how are we ever supposed to know? And it's now late August. Here comes November. It's less than 70 days away. We'll have a presidential election. Famous phrase of the October surprise. Who knows what's going to play out between now and then? How will we know what's true and what's not? It's going to be a mystifying experience. And it's paradoxical. This isn't necessarily an argument, therefore pay attention to none of it, though I think that's a reasonable position to take. Keep your head down. Focus on your life, your household, your work, your skills, your network, the people you can help. That's valid. But it strikes me that a lot of what we see that is the supposedly immediately urgent, quote, news of the day is at best a countermeasure by one partisan group against another, battling out in their own, quote, battle space here. The evolution of weapons and defenses have counteracted each other since the beginning of warfare. From shield and sword to radar and jammer, military science has parried each new technology with an appropriate response. Well, technology sure changed a lot. All this chatter about the social engines, so-called Facebook and Google and Twitter, and Russian influence, Chinese influence, the political party power structures, all of it. All of it. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. And it's also interesting how often tiny little moves turn out to be of gigantic importance. So it's a dizzying thing. It's a dizzying thing. I don't feel like I have a grasp of the real battle space of politics any more than I do the battle space among the submarines, of which I know almost nothing. So we'll see over the next weeks. Probably bring in more such things related to that whole world. Not submarines, but the idea of sort of how we gather information and how we deal. What do we do? What do we do as citizens? What countermeasures do we need against such forces? It's got me thinking. Hope y'all are having a good one. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks.